Well, then we're just going to stay with the same issues, right? We create a lot of intelligent sensors and IoTs that are gathering loads of the data, but if we keep keeping them on silos, then there's no marketplace where everyone is actually benefiting from the diversity of the data sets, right? So that is why I really think it only data collection per se is completely useless if you keep it in a silo.
Moin und willkommen bei Freifahrt, dem Interview-Podcast zum Thema Mikromobilität rund um Fahrräder, E-Scooter, Lastenfahrräder und neuen Fahrzeugkonzepten. Hier spreche ich mit Expertinnen, Unternehmerinnen, Herstellern, Entscheidern, Enthusiasten und auch Kritikern über die Zukunft der Mobilität. Mich interessiert, warum das Fahrrad seit 200 Jahren existiert und dennoch weniger Beachtung findet als E-Scooter, welche innerhalb von weniger als 2 Jahren in aller Munde sind. Ich möchte herausfinden, was wir tun müssen, damit Mikromobilität mehr Beachtung bei der Verkehrsplanung bekommt und wir so in Zukunft in gesünderen und lebenswerteren Städten leben können. Mich fasziniert, warum es in Holland und Dänemark selbstverständlich ist, mit einem Lastenfahrrad unterwegs zu sein und wir hierzulande wiederum kostenlosen Parkraum als selbstverständlich erachten. Ich möchte von meinen Gesprächspartnern und Gesprächspartnerinnen lernen und so für euch einen 360-Grad-Blick auf Fahrzeuge, Anbieter, Strategien, Politik bedenken und auch Potenziale werfen. Mein Name ist Sebastian Hofer und heute spreche ich mit Christian Brink von dem norwegischen Software-Startup Urban Sharing. Ich liebe ja Gespräche in einer fast schon systemischen, philosophischen Flughöhe. Christian beweist für mich als Vice President für Strategie und Business Development eindrucksvoll, wie man den Spagat schafft, an dieser Flughöhe für strategische Themen unterwegs zu sein und gleichzeitig ein tiefes Verständnis für die Anforderungen von der Straße zu besitzen. Direkt zu Beginn des Gesprächs erfahre ich, welch ungewöhnlichen und spannenden Lebensweg Christian hinter sich hat. Vom Archäologiestudium und Arbeit in Kairo in Ausgrabungsstätten, über Bikesharing bei Nextbike in Leipzig bis zur Beratung in Singapur. Er ist unfassbar neugierig und ist ständig dabei, sich neue Fähigkeiten beizubringen, meistens am Wochenende. Dazu zählen das Programmieren, die Finanzwelt seit neuestem oder eben Mikromobilität, sein selbsternanntes Hobby. Eine der Kernfunktionalitäten von Urban Sharing ist es, Anbietern von Sharing-Systemen die tägliche Arbeit des Umverteilens und Bereitstellens zu vereinfachen. Er spricht in dem Kontext von den Helden, die dafür sorgen, dass Fahrräder und E-Scooter immer dort stehen, wo wir sie brauchen. Genau dafür bauen sie ihre Software, um diese Arbeit mittels Forecasting beispielsweise und kluger Beobachtung der Nutzungsmuster zu optimieren. Christian ist der Meinung, dass zum einen das offene Teilen von Daten zwischen Mobilitätsanbietern, Städten und dem ÖPNV und zum anderen diese Optimierung des Betriebs eben dieser Mobilitätsangebote helfen werden, noch lebenswertere Städte in der Zukunft zu entwickeln. Und führt dazu Tallinn, Oslo und Helsinki beispielsweise an. Für manch einen scheint die Anzahl an E-Scootern auf den Straßen bereits viel zu groß zu sein. Für Urban Sharing und für Christian hingegen geht es gerade erst richtig los, den Vorteil ihrer Software ausspielen zu können. Denn wenn man bedenkt, dass Mikromobilität ja im Vergleich zu Carsharing ein Angebot mit sehr großen Flotten erfordert, um das Nutzerbedürfnis möglichst omnipräsent und zu jeder Zeit abdecken zu können, sind noch viel größere Flotten notwendig, um all die privaten PKWs in unseren Städten zu ersetzen. So, und bevor es losgeht, würde ich mich freuen, wenn du mir bei 8 kurzen Fragen zu meinem Podcast helfen würdest. Der Link dieser kurzen Umfrage steht in den Shownotes. Jetzt aber viel Spaß mit Christian Brink und Urban Sharing. You seem to be a very adventurous and curious human being.
I don't know about that, but yeah, I'm definitely curious. That is what I am.
Okay, my guest tonight is Christian Brink. He is the Vice President for Strategy and Business Development for Urban Sharing, a company from Oslo that do a lot of things in the area of micromobility and bike sharing and sharing of other forms of transport. But I bet you are going to explain what you do yourself in a couple of minutes. So, hello, Christian. Very, very thank you very much to have you on my show tonight.
Good evening, Sebastian. Thank you for having me.
I read on your LinkedIn that you have a master in Egyptian archaeology and you studied history in, I think, in Madrid and Rome. I was really surprised to read this because I thought you would have like a couple of MBAs or masters and anything more related towards business development or something like that. How does that come?
Yeah, that's actually funny that you mention it, because I have had a little change in my life since I finished college, and my whole idea was to stay in academia. Since I was a kid, basically, I dreamt about becoming an archaeologist and digging up ancient antiquities in Egypt, which was a dream that I fulfilled at the age of 22. And then the next steps of my life actually involved probably either just staying in academia or making a pivot, which I decided to try out while living in Cairo. I tried out to work at the UN Habitat. And over there, I but it mixed a little bit my knowledge of geographic or landscape archaeology together with housing, water management, and also mobility in cities in the Middle East. And that was when I realized that I wanted to work more in actual either private sector, but at least activities that have to do with humans nowadays and not only in the past. So I could either go for an MBA or I could just learn by doing. And that was what I decided back then. And until this day, I've been going through bike share into consultancy as well last year. And now ended up in a software as a service company for micromobility.
You said that you've been, you did bike, yeah, you did consultancy. As far as I know, you did that in Singapore, didn't you? For like a couple of months or years, you moved over there.
That is correct. That is correct. Just long story short, finished my time in Cairo. We had one incoming bike share project for a desert city there.
In Egypt.
In Egypt, that was basically my way of getting into this world of micromobility. Nobody really wanted that project back in the office. So then I come from Copenhagen, so everybody thought, well, you know about bikes, so here we go. And then I started doing some surveys, studies about the feasibility, and calling up companies.
Okay.
And the most interested one was actually back then Nextbike from Germany. And once I finished my time in UN Habitat, I entered an agreement with them about working together with them in business development and moved to Germany. And since then, I grew there, learned a lot about everything that needs to be known about bike share, public tenders, and the whole micromobility development in these past few years. I learned it there. And then in October 2018, I decided to go solo and create my own mobility consultancy. And I moved to Singapore.
The obvious and choice going from Leipzig to Singapore.
Obvious choice, obviously. No, I actually went there because there's a lot happening. And it was another dream of mine to actually create a sort of link between Europe and China and East Asia in terms of production facilities and European companies and vice versa. So that was the whole purpose, to just create a little base there. And it worked pretty fine. But then urban sharing came on the way, and we figured out that now things are super hot in the software as a service space of at least in Europe, with all mobility operators needing more efficient tools for their operations. So I couldn't resist to come back and work with them.
You seem to be quite curious, and like you said, you do most of what you do by teaching it yourself or doing any kinds of courses to to beef up your own like skill set. Do you have any idea of where that comes from?
I guess that it's not completely stupid to study humanities at the end of the day. I guess that I always say it used to be a subject that everyone, all my acquaintances would tell me wouldn't lead me anywhere. I guess that at least having that curiosity of learning where the sources are and memorizing a lot of different volumes and books just gave me a little advantage, at least when it comes to synthesizing big pieces of information. I guess that's the only thing I can say here. All the rest, I really don't know even how I got here with these different cities that I've been to. It was a bit just along the way, saying yes to the opportunities, and here we are, right? We're still alive.
Thanks for sharing. I think that's quite fascinating, like curriculum. Or yeah, how much time do you use, like every week or on for your life to learn or to dig into new, you know, whatever, coding or any kinds of skills that you think are useful for your daily work?
It's actually funny that you ask. I spend a lot of my weekends on doing sort of self-teaching activities. I'm really a big fan of online courses such as Coursera, edX. Before, I used to have to go to libraries and stuff, but now you can just learn everything through your screen. So I think I have three main hobbies in my life. I play a lot of football. I teach myself finance is the latest thing that I'm teaching myself. I've been going through a Python course while I was in Singapore. And working in micromobility, I consider that a hobby, which is a bad thing because you end up work is defining or driving most of your life. So probably a reason why I keep being single here, but these are the three activities that keep me happy in my day-to-day.
Which is beautiful to say, if I may say that, because having something that keeps you happy by and following your pursuit and your intrinsic motivation, I mean, that is a beautiful thing to say. Thanks for that.
Absolutely. I'm happy. Yeah, I'm definitely enjoying my life at this stage, you know, it's, yeah.
Was there any point of in your life where you thought, "Hey, I'd rather go into other forms of transport, other forms of mobility"?
Actually, other forms of mobility. There was one moment where I was seriously considering going towards more of a traditional business education, and even more financially driven profession when I left Nextbike. And probably one of the reasons why I decided to stay was when I moved to Singapore with one of my college friends to work in the startup scene over there. I discovered the value of my network and of the very specific domain knowledge I had acquired within the mobility space. So I decided to stick to that. So yeah, along the way, there's been several temptations to kind of switch industry. I do believe, though, that this one, first of all, is one that is it's in the genesis of its development. So in the next 10 years, I definitely think that everyone, all of us that are interested in this space, we're going to be the fathers of a way bigger movement in the years to come. And secondly, I think that it's a beautiful industry to be in that actually changes the world, and that is not just moving money around or selling guns or something. So those were two of the reasons why I decided to stay. And beyond that, I'm very curious about all modes of transport. So anything that is helping out to have more livable cities, that's where I would like to work.
So livable cities, that's your motivation of what you do on your daily life?
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. I think I'm very interested in the social aspect of mobility, about how we ended up in a society where there is this dichotomy between cars, public transport, and citizens they feel like they have a choice, but they don't really have a choice. Now I feel like micromobility, all the other ride-hailing, car-sharing ventures that are coming out, they're basically bringing or making more affordable the way you move, the way you commute within the city. And it's bringing the choice, right? Before, it was only it was a social status aspect to have a car. Whereas today, it's way more, well, what kind of services do you want to have? Are you time sensitive? Are you price sensitive? And then you move around the city. And I think that we've progressed in that sense socially. So that is what interests me when working here.
I mean, you lived in a couple of different cities, and what you said highly resonates with what I think, and I would check on that. On the other side, though, I have the feeling that this is a bit of a like bubble kind of view on the transport world nowadays, since car registrations are rising. I was in India last year, and when they showed the vision of the city that they wanted to build on a greenfield, it consisted mainly of big roads and SUV parking lots and shopping malls. So why are you so convinced of what you just said?
I definitely think that there is a trend happening. It's true that it's probably a very European trend to start shutting down city centers to at least to privately owned cars, not to cars per se, because we still see car sharing and ride hailing happening. But it is a trend at least to make a more efficient use of the space. I definitely think that with the rise of technology, of IT as intelligent transport systems, where all the vehicles are going to be connected, not just for the data that you can gather, but also for safety reasons. I just think that it makes sense that we don't have this kind of anarchy that we have nowadays, where it's just based on, well, at least our traffic is based on a set of roads and stuff that are basically, you can, if you just exchange the car with a carriage, you can go all the way back to the Roman times, and you won't see much of a difference in the way that the roads are being managed, right? So I think that we're assisting to a big change in that mindset in prioritizing public transport, pedestrians, and other motor vehicles to, for example, getting more green lights, etc. Like we're assisting to a set of changes that just make sense then to reduce the space that has been traditionally only allowed to cars, and into just making an efficient use of the space, whether this is pedestrianization or if it's just creating multi-vehicle roads and cyclist infrastructure and for other modes of transport. I think that is something that has started in Europe, and not only, also in Canada and the US. And I saw in Singapore and in a set of Southeast Asian cities that they're doing the same kind of developments. And I just think it's a matter of time that India and China are going to double down on this still. But it's definitely going to happen sooner or later.
If you say it's a matter of time, and you also talked about prioritization of different modes of transport relative to the privately owned car, which kind of measures do you see, or maybe you at Urban Sharing do in order to push into that direction?
I definitely think that it's important to make an appropriate use of the data that is available. We have plenty of smart vehicles now, whereas 5 to 10 years ago, most of the vehicles we had on the street were untraceable and were not providing us with information. Nowadays, we've seen it even in the Douglas bike wave, all these sensors that some of the Asian companies were bringing into the vehicles. I think that is amazing. It's a huge amount of data that is just laying there, that if it was connected to the traffic, for example, the just crossings and all the ways that we work with the infrastructure, I definitely think that will help improving the way that we're commuting in the cities, and just making a more holistic organization of the traffic without only having certain entities directing the public transport, and then everything else is kind of doing their own thing. If we start making some sensible decisions through the data, that I think will be the key.
Before we go into that topic deeper, I'd like you to explain what Urban Sharing actually does for all of the listeners who might have heard but don't really know maybe the difference to others on the market. What's special about you? Where are you very, very good at?
Yeah. Urban Sharing is a software as a service platform for micromobility operators. That means any operator that has a bike sharing fleet, a scooter sharing fleet, or a moped sharing fleet, they will need a platform in which, first of all, connect their vehicles to basically manage their fleet and control where all the vehicles are moving around in the city. And secondly, we are providing a working tool as well. So that means that we're not only bringing in the map where you can see all these different dots moving around, we're also providing a list of sheets, maintenance tools in order to provide and empower the service crews that are on the street and that are more getting more and more attention from the general public nowadays, because we've seen so many bikes, so many scooters scattered around cities that we see that there is a need for those people in vans redistributing and maintaining the vehicles that are out on the streets. So our tool is a software for those crews that are the sort of invisible heroes of our cities that are keeping them clean and that are making, that are meeting the demand on a daily basis for the commuters. So we mix the use of data and we create a logical advice for the operators that are sitting in the office and deciding what tasks their teams are going to carry out on a daily basis. And at the same time, with the same interface, we're providing a working tool with a series of actions that the crews on the street can carry out. So basically a balance between executional buttons, basically, and our dashboards and data analytics.
On LinkedIn, you wrote that the lighter the vehicle, the more important operations become. And you also said that I think cars already have, the cities are built around them, and therefore car sharing are more booking driven than fleet management driven.
Yeah.
Can you explain that?
Yeah, we see urban sharing comes from a background within bike sharing. So traditionally, the fleets are big in bike sharing. We're talking about thousands and even tens of thousands of vehicles within one city. Whereas car sharing and moped sharing do have more limited numbers. And at the end of the day, we're talking about different user behaviors as well when users go to use a car sharing or moped sharing system versus scooters and bikes. Just as an example, a user will be willing to walk 500 to 800 meters for a car or moped because they usually know that they can get way further with that vehicle in a comfortable way. Whereas with a scooter and a bike, if you don't have the right density and the right offer to meet the demand, if a customer has to walk more than 500 meters, it's probably not even worth to take that mode of transport, given the limited distance that they can convey with them, right? So it's basically to understand the difference between what kind of which part of the commuting you're solving. It's not only last mile, but bike share and scooter sharing, they do have their benefits and also their limitations. So when we talk about car sharing and moped sharing, we're talking way more about a booking game. When you are offering that demand that is quite kind of limited, you prefer, or you're basically trying to create a system in which customers can access it in the most efficient way. Whereas if you have a lot of vehicles, many units, it's more a fleet game. It's more macro numbers. So we're talking about big vans rebalancing several vehicles per day and in several parts of the city to bring them to the right place. At the end of the day, operationally, those two are completely different ballgames. And it's not that either is better or worse. It's just different in terms of the software.
How do you, for example, forecast the location or the necessary location of micro vehicles? How do you know where you need to put them at which time of the day in order to, what you said, in order to have the right rebalancing and therefore to have optimized the service for the customer on the road, on the ground?
Yeah, it's good that you asked, because right now we are basically finishing our new product, which is separate from our platform. So we call this the smart rebalancing tool. For this tool, we're using historical data. So all the data we can from the last years on a day-to-day basis. So basically for taking the day a year ago and saying, okay, this was the demand that we met in each one of these areas of the city. And at the same time, also with live data. So bringing into the algorithm those two data sets are also taking into account the differences that can happen in the specific day, because bike share and scooter share and micromobility in general are very sensitive modes of transport towards weather changes, events in the city, and even topography, the differences in height in the city, right? If it's a hilly city, it's not going to have the same pattern, the same flows of ridership, right? So it's important to take into account the historical data. You're probably resolving the topography issue there. With live data, you are also taking into account events that could happen, or, for example, traffic jams, accidents. We're taking that into account. And we are also trying to differentiate and make it even more precise, this algorithm that we have developed, including also weather data, and even if possible in some cities, traffic data as well. So with creating a strategy. Yes.
Do you also, somewhere on your blogs, I read about multimodal fleets. And since you said you can manage bike share and scooter share and moped share, I think you also have something going on with cargo bikes. How do you prioritize, for example, use cases in order to learn which vehicle type is the best for a specific use case, and therefore modify your rebalancing, let's say, patterns based on like a daily basis, for example?
Yeah, I think the main difference here that we see, or at least the vehicle types that are creating the biggest difference in terms of operations, are the electrified vehicles versus the mechanical vehicles, right?
Okay.
Traditionally, we have been working a lot with mechanical bikes in the systems that we are supporting, including cargo bikes as well. But it's usually, first of all, the decision is in the hands of the operator. Usually, the operator are the ones that are playing the local card, and they know which needs the city has better than anyone else. So we have the pretension and the ambition of becoming the main European SaaS platform for micromobility. And that means that we cannot know what is the most suitable vehicle for every single city. This is, first of all, why we're trusting them. But secondly, we are creating differentiations that are common to all cities. For example, differentiating between the patterns in mechanical bikes versus e-bikes. Just that single difference is huge in terms of not just the bike distance that is being carried out between users that are using one kind of the or the other, but also even in the dynamics of the rebalancing in the city, right? Because there is some customers start just making more use of these, for example, the electrical bikes in hilly areas that were not even thought of in the operations of a mechanical bike system, right? So We definitely take those into account. We're trying to limit the amount of vehicles that we are integrating with. So, for example, we try to focus on 1, 2, max 3 new vehicle types per year in order to face the amount of demand that we'll meet from operators. But otherwise, we think that we're not providing the right service of linking operations, targeted operations for that vehicle type, with if we have to mix it with a million different kinds. So this is how we're approaching the problem at the moment.
And which cities are you active with your with your software? Which sharing systems do you support currently?
Right now, we have the three largest cities in Norway, so Oslo, Bergen and Trondheim, Edinburgh in Scotland, and right now we are launching in Milan and Verona, the legacy bike share systems of those two cities in March, April.
I'm picturing you sitting in front of your monitoring dashboards and seeing like how the dots of all kinds of different vehicles are moving across the city to learn about moving patterns and learn about all the data that you need in order to understand moving patterns of people using micromobility. Do you, for example, have like links to public transport to understand whether or not bikes or scooters in the cities that you mentioned are used in an intermodal way?
Yeah, absolutely. This is one of our value propositions as well, the possibility to integrate with public transport apps and make the data that we are supplying as basically as easily transferable as possible. So we use data standardizations that are the latest ones in the market. For example, for bike share, we are completely GBFS capable. We're right now also working with MBS. We'll see if that ends up taking off or not in Europe as well. So even GTFS, so any specification that public transport authorities are working with in their data, we try to make it as available as possible and also empower the operators that used to have softwares that are either bootstrapped or provided by suppliers that are very rigid in their software offering. We're then basically organizing the data for them and making it easily transferable for mobility as a service ventures and projects out in the city.
Do you have success stories where this already worked, where, let's say, cities or public transport operators actually now know how to make use of the data that you provide and maybe the linked data of mobility trips?
Yeah, with the bike share system here in Oslo, we have had several collaborations with the local public transport authority in Oslo that is called Ruter. We have several colleagues as well that have been part of the development of this public transport authority's own mobility as a service apps. So we are very well connected with them. For example, in the case of the Italian projects we have going on, it was a requirement, and it is one of the value propositions that we're bringing in there to upgrade the pre-existing systems, is actually to make the data available for the public transport authorities. In the case of Milan, for example, is the ATM, public transport authority there. We're going to integrate with their public transport information that they have through the website and app. So absolutely, those are the cases. And we hope to be able to bring this vision of mobility as a service included in public transport to the rest of the cities in Europe.
Can you go a little bit further into detail of what you actually, what they do with the mobility data or the data that you provide based on the vehicles? For example, in Oslo, given that, or I assume that this is the most progressed or well ahead system out there currently.
Yeah, it depends a little bit on what the interest of the public transport authority is. But in the most cases, on the most basic level, authorities will only use it as a way of offering information just within the map. That would be level one, so to say.
As a customer, I can see, for example, bikes where they are situated, and then I can don't need the third party app, for example.
Exactly, and if it's a station based system, you're able to see the amount of available docks that are there, etc. If it's an e-bike or an e-scooter, you can see the charge of the battery. And next level would then be also to make combined trips. So basically, if you want to go from A to B, providing you the information a little bit a la Google Maps or other data aggregators for mobility.
This is what you plan to do.
We don't have any public transport authority that has been asking us for that as of yet, but this is something that we are completely capable of doing. So if there's any public,
do you think they, what is your take? Like, do they not interested in this intermodal trips? Is that not?
It really depends. As I was saying, if we take the chain of the businesses that are happening, we are going to usually to the operators, and most of our operators are actually private, but then are offering services to the city. So in these cases, it's usually depending on the relationship that the private operator is having towards the city, and the business models there depend a lot according to the local dynamics that they've been having there. The more systems that are coming into our platform, we hope that the more we can be able to prove our integratable data sets. But that is something that we're very much looking forward to working with.
What is your take on these intermodal trips between public transport and micro vehicles? Do you think, like, what's the potential? What is your, idea about this?
I definitely think that it's the way to go. I'm very impressed that cities still do not have this. I know that ELB has been an interesting initiative by the city of Berlin with the BVG. There has been. I do know, for example, the MVG agency of Munich used to have a pretty good integration as well with micromobility and shared routing. I do not specifically think they have intermodal routing, but as far as I understand, the ticketing system was completely integrated. So that means that you're able to buy bus tickets as well as bike sharing and even car sharing through the same app, which is quite different from other mobility aggregators. So maybe you're not doing the entire trip, but you are able to buy a combined ticket. So that is already quite advanced. But I definitely think that is the way to go. But there's so many issues of data sharing here. And we all know that from the big private aggregators out there, Uber, Lyft, and public transport authorities in this fight. So this is nothing new under the sun, right?
I mean, you are big into data, and you said there are issues in terms of data sharing. And you also think, you say that you are, as Urban Sharing, very open to sharing data to obviously your customers and also to cities. Why are you so convinced, or why do you believe that sharing data is relevant and important?
I think it's really the driver of change in most of the cities. Without this sharing of data, there would be no ITS, there would be no intelligent transport systems, there would be no smart city initiatives. As long as you have data, you have the power, basically. It's just a matter of how you slice up that data. If you just have this big chunk of big data, which it seems like what we are ending up with in the mobility space right now due to the lack of share of data with the right stakeholders that have the tools to slice the data up the right way so that we can make sensible decisions, well, then we're just going to stay with the same issues, right? We create a lot of intelligent sensors and IoTs that are gathering loads of the data, but if we keep keeping them on silos, then there's no marketplace where everyone is actually benefiting from the diversity of the data sets, right? So that is why I really think it only data collection per se is completely useless if you keep it in a silo. Let's just put it that way.
And who's going to use the data then? Like in order to, for example, get back to the livable cities that you mentioned in the beginning?
Well, I definitely think that it's going to become just the data is going to become the raw material that all other companies are going to create tools for, right? More than a tool, it is actually going to be the raw materials that any company are going to work with. So I would say everyone is going to benefit from this, from the smallest stakeholders of a mobility project, say, for example, just the service operator of a micromobility system, like any scooter sharing program, to the public transport authorities, and also the private aggregators that are out there. I definitely think that without a sensible sharing and use of it, of the data, we're all losing. So the more public transport authorities and private companies are fighting for who is paying who for the data sharing, the slower the development of more livable cities is happening, right? If we figure that one out, and we have great examples in the Baltics with Tallinn and Helsinki of actually a public-private partnership that works with MaaS, do you actually have examples of livable cities that are happening, even Oslo, right? But the more cities where you just have this differentiation between this is the public realm versus the private, then data is just kept in silos, not shared, and eventually the cities just stay the same.
Christian, do you remember a moment of epiphany where you had this moment of, okay, this is what you can do with data. This is why we need this, and this is what we can do with it. Do you remember that moment of epiphany for you?
I definitely think that for myself, back at Nextbike, I had some of the greatest moments working together with public transport authorities throughout Germany. The systems that I already mentioned, the BVG, MVG, and KVB in Berlin, Munich, and Cologne, respectively, are doing huge jobs. Since then, I think when I arrived at Urban Sharing, it's actually where I had an epiphany myself with all the know-how that was in the company already. With the colleagues that are here that basically have a huge amount of experience developing apps, even as I was saying, for the public transport authority. So personally, I had that epiphany. I think that Urban Sharing as a company discovered this through the experiences of digitizing, first of all, the channels of subscription and rental of the public bike share system, first of all. And secondly, when integrating with the public transport authority here, the amount of activities that can be carried out only if you have proper tools to create data analytics that are sensible is infinite. And really, I think that we're just grasping like the surface of the amount of possibilities and opportunities that we have right now here in the company. I'm just amazed of the pipeline we have of product development. is way more exciting than what we have done until now.
Is there anything you can share that you're looking forward to?
Definitely think that I'm very excited about the dynamic rebalancing tool that we're producing here. I think it's going to be quite a game changer within the micromobility operations that we've seen so far that have been questionably effective in a lot of European cities. So I think that is going to bring a lot of interesting use of machine learning in micromobility and for the fleet management. But in the other hand, I think that we are creating some pretty interesting models of data sharing that will make it so easy for operators to integrate with other companies that we feel like we're bringing the data sharing possibilities one step ahead. And I think throughout the summer and fall this year, we're going to see some interesting news coming out from this company here in Norway.
What about autonomous rebalancing for scooters? Do you believe in that?
I actually saw some prototypes back in Singapore in late 2018 about autonomous scooters that would go back to the warehouse by themselves. I really think that there is a long way to go in that sense. And I also think that there are higher priorities thinking about the cities as a whole and not just focusing on the vehicles as single units themselves driving back to places by themselves. But everything that is research and innovation, we embrace it happily. I just do think that at a micromobility level, fleet management tools are still in a very, very basic level, and we have a long way to go there.
I would like to learn a little bit more about your take on what's happening on the street. For example, are you more into free floating versus station based sharing? Do you like personally? And maybe also from a company perspective, are you more convinced that bike sharing is the future, or is it scooters? Is it like anything in any other vehicle types that are not on the streets yet? Are you annoyed? Do you think it's okay how scooters are on the street and bikes vice versa or respectively? Like, what is your view on the last, let's say, 1 year micromobility in Europe?
I definitely think that in terms of the technology, dockless versus hybrid versus station-based, we're, as a company and even at a personal level, we're completely agnostic. I really think that it depends on the city. Every city is in a whole ecosystem. And actually, this is one of the values that we have here at Urban Sharing, is to respect the regionalisms of each one of the cities. And that is actually what keeps the beauty of each one of them and gets an identity. So if a city decides to go for station-based bike share, or they decide to go for free-floating e-bikes or for free-floating e-scooters, I think that there is a demand for each one of these vehicles, each one of these modes. We embrace them. And I think that one of the challenges that makes our job beautiful here at Urban Sharing is actually to be able to cater for each one of these models. So we believe definitely that the differences and variances only enriches the micromobility ecosystem. And the issues that we have been facing are just, first of all, they're normal. In any disruptive technology, there's always a little bit of chaos, and that is good, because then there is actually space for improvement, space for consolidation. And this is where we think that we can be useful, exactly for what you were mentioning, scooters scattered all around the city, thrown into the Seine River in Paris, bikes all around. these are things that are minor issues compared to the amount of pollution and space that cars are bringing to us. However, they are still annoying and they need to be improved. And that is that is really the problem that urban sharing wants to resolve in our mission and vision statement, right? We want to create tools that make all the micromobility systems, first of all, efficient and profitable for the operator, but at the same time, help to create a livable city, right? And first of all, that goes through making safe and vandalism-free systems. So everything, all the data that we can manage to slice up and present the right way so that the operator can execute on what we're suggesting that they should do, that is really the secret sauce of what we're doing.
That sounds like an excellent way to finish this conversation. There's probably not much more to add. Or is there anything else that you forgot to say that you would like to add that came up into your mind during the conversation? Now is your last word, Chris.
My last word? No, I definitely think that right now we are in a turning point. I think I would just like to say that I've been through the Douglas bike share wave in 2017. We've been through the Douglas kick scooter wave, which happened in 2018-19. I'm very excited for what the next big thing is going to be. I have my own hope that it will be something perhaps less controversial, but that has a huge impact the same way that these waves impacted the way that we move around. It's undeniable that they at least made us all think and rethink the way that cities were working. So whether the next big thing is a three-wheeler vehicle or if it's proper use of software, I would cheer for the latter one. I definitely think that we're in a moment of change, and we have to be proud and feel grateful that we are able to live this and be able to change the cities for the better for the next 100 years.
My last question is, what's the bicycle behind on the wall behind you? I was wondering that all along.
It's actually an old blueprint of a 10-speed road bicycle that some of our engineers put up here as a way of decoration. I think it inspires us quite a lot to remember what this is all about, because as a mobility tech company, we're usually mostly only thinking about data and how we can improve machine learning. So at the end of the day, none of that would work if we don't actually think about the vehicles out there and how they're built, right? So I think this is why we need reminders on the wall of the actual vehicles that are going to be used in
that. The actual mechanical piece of equipment that's out there that you can move around efficiently in the future with your software. Beautiful, nice.
Exactly, that's what it's all about.
Okay, Christian, thank you so much for your enthusiasm, for your open words, for your insights, and sharing so much of interesting stuff about your daily life, about urban sharing. Appreciate it. See you soon in one of these mobility nerd events that we like to attend.
Hope to see you soon, Sebastian. Always a pleasure to talk about these topics.
Schön, dass du wieder eingeschaltet hast bei Freifahrt. Welche neuen Gedanken hattest du beim Zuhören? Hattest du Fragen? Dann schreib mir diese doch gerne als E-Mail an podcast@freifahrt.org oder als Kommentar bei iTunes. Dort und auf Spotify und wo es sonst so Podcasts zu hören gibt, kann man Freifahrt übrigens auch abonnieren. Ansonsten bin ich ebenfalls bei Twitter und Instagram unter dem Handle Freifahrt zu finden und freue mich auch dort über eine Folgschaft und Nachrichten. Zum Abschluss der Folge möchte ich kurz darauf hinweisen, dass du mich ab sofort auch über steadyhq.com/freifahrt mit einem kleinen finanziellen Beitrag unterstützen kannst, meinen Podcast weiterhin unabhängig produzieren zu können. Alle genannten Links findest du natürlich auch in den Shownotes. In diesem Sinne, bleib zu Hause und bleib gesund. Und wenn es sein muss, gute Fahrt und lass die Haare wehen.